When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to our first Wizards and Ashes Daily Podcast from Lords. It's Australia's Day. Only five down at the close after England won the toss and opted to bowl first under cloudy skies with a pitch that was doing more than just a bit. Ben, Australia are definitely on top, but it could have been so much worse had it not been for that double strike from Root late in the day.
Yeah, it's just one of those stupid things that happens with this England team that you just got to give up trying to explain it. You know, you can add it to Harry Brook getting Kane Williamson in that crazy one-run win at the end of the winter. You can add it to, you know, Usman Khawaja getting yorked on 1-4-1 when Stokes makes the most obvious plan you can think of, you know, putting everyone in front of his, like, you know, he's going to bowl a yorker, and that's what happens, and yet he still tries to squeeze it out and gets bowled. You know, they pick, you know, spinners who have, you know, no sort of form or, you know, record behind them, and they take sixes or fives, whatever it is in Pakistan, on flat tracks that aren't offering them a huge amount. It's just what England do. And Root's a good off spinner, right? We shouldn't, you know, discredit Root in this. And the first ball especially was a nice piece of bowling. And I guess that's what Travis Head's approach brings. Like, there were singles on offer. He could have just tucked it around all day and he would have been, you know.
It was a very England dismissal, actually.
Yeah, it was just an England four balls, actually. Like, actually, you can very much imagine England's Cameron Green and Ben Stokes doing exactly that, right? Coming down the track, third ball to Nathan Lyon and plinking him to mid on, except it was the opposite. And that was the other thing that's so weird, is because Australia have been so showily anti-England this whole time, right? They put a deep point out from ball one. They, like, in the press conference, like, you know, England name a team, you know, 2 days out, and Australia, like, keep their cards so close to their chest. Everything they've done is, like, almost to make a point that they are the opposite of what this England team are. And for four balls, they kind of forgot that. And it has brought England back into the game, even if Australia's still ahead.
Mm. That Chelsea podcast asked, was that the worst day of the Stokes-McCullum era so far? It really wasn't great. And even those two wickets, you can't really, you know, Root probably does head in the air a little bit, but you can't really attribute that to England outdoing Australia at all. I thought England's seam attack were about maybe 60, 70%. All day, which isn't really good enough against a team like Australia. Broad and Anderson were decent enough with the new ball, but I think life was relatively straightforward for Warner Khawaja given the conditions. There's that drop chance by Pope, whose shoulder is potentially a problem for England for the rest of the Test match and the series. And then there was Robinson. I asked Crickviz about Robinson's pace. His average was down about 4 mph in the morning session compared to what it was across the entirety of the Old Trafford test against South Africa last year. That's a big difference between averaging 83 miles per hour and 79 miles per hour. Tongue bowled some brilliant deliveries. He got the first two wickets, but even then I thought he produced quite a few hit me balls and looked quite tired towards the end of the day. There were too many no balls again. And I think the really frustrating thing was that this morning when I was walking into the ground, you hear that England have won the toss and bowling first. The conditions felt very Edgbaston 2015 or Trent Bridge 2015 or Headingley 2019, where you felt that England could really run through Australia here if they got a few early wickets. And the frustrating thing is when Smith and Labuschagne came in, conditions had already begun to get better for batting. So even though England aren't out of the game, you feel that they could have been miles on top given the conditions, given that they won the toss. You know, who knows, we could be sitting here tomorrow and they've England and bowled Australia out for less than 400 and England start well and they're still on top. But conditions were so good for bowling at the start of the day in a way that they just weren't at all at Edgbaston, that you feel like it really is a big missed opportunity.
It's definitely a missed opportunity, and overall, yeah, Australia have had the better day. But it's also worth remembering with this England team that they have had bad days under and you know, hold bad games under Stokes and McCullum. And actually, apart from that Pakistan tour, they actually haven't, you know, they haven't blown sides away through whole games that much. You know, like, they chase some big totals, and you chase big totals when you don't do that well in the first three innings. You know, in the first day on Trent Bridge, New Zealand made 318 for four. So that was, you know, okay, that was a better pitch, but that's still a worse day overall than this one. After, on the day two against India, Bumrah hit broad for the, you know, the world record runs in a test over, and England were like 84 for five at the end of the day. I think that's probably a worse day than this one. So they've had bad days, and they've shown that they can also recover from that and also kind of shrug off bad days and make them not really feel like bad days. Like, that was one of the weird things I remember in that, actually in that India game, that at the end of day two, you had to really like sort of like go, oh, hang on, England are really far behind this game. That's weird. Why doesn't it feel like they're far behind? England haven't played very well, and yet it somehow feels like they are still in it. And in the end, they kind of were. And that's the same kind of thing here. Like, you kind of sort of think, oh, hang on, England are quite far behind, but sort of still feel like there's a decent chance they could come back into it.
But I guess it was a day where England weren't great, but it had nothing to do with Basball. Some people almost leaping the opportunity when they see England do anything that's not great. They want to criticise the philosophy, the strategy behind what's made England successful over the last year. But this has nothing to do with Basball. It was simple as the bowlers weren't hitting their areas well enough. I mean, Robinson is one of my favourite bowlers in the world. He's, you know, when you're down, your pace is down 5% in a match as big as this, when the conditions are as good as that, that's not really good enough. And I think England were maybe slightly unlucky not to pick up one or two more wickets in the first two sessions. There were quite a few plays and misses. But overall, I don't think they can complain that much about the end of day situation.
Yeah, I mean, there's a stat you can look at two ways. So Australia left, there was a cricket was posted that they'd left 30 balls in the first session, which is more than England left in the whole of the Edgbaston test, which I think showed that England maybe weren't making Australia play enough. And the 31st ball they left hit Khawaja's off stump.
Yeah.
So that goes one of two ways. But yeah, I guess also the other thing, well, the other two things that are kind of anti-Basball about this. One is that in a way, the Basball thing to do would have been to pick Mark Wood. Like, England have at times said, you know, they're not really going to bother with rest and rotation too much. If they can get, you know, guys who are fit onto the park, they're going to do that and just pick the best attack they can for a given game, which is actively not what they've done here. They've held Mark Wood back to give him another Wood to get fit, which might be the smart thing to do, but it is a bit anti what they've gone through so far. And also plans wise, right? Like,
they didn't really do anything funky all day.
Yeah, that was what was so stark about the root thing, was that felt really like just, you know, plod along until the new ball. They didn't do the thing that they often do, which is, you know, stick loads of men on the boundary, start bowling bounces. They didn't, you know, have everyone in front of the bat, which, you know, and sometimes you can criticise England for going to that kind of thing too readily. And this pitch should have been the one where you can just plug away on off stump for long enough and you will get your reward. So you, in a way, you can't blame them for that, but it's also, they didn't do that. And that also didn't work for most of the day.
It could have been a lot worse for England. I mean, when Head and Smith were going, this felt like a day one in an Ashes in Australia. You know, England picking a slightly weird side, like, you know, as we said on the weekly pod, who would have predicted Josh Tung to be in the England 11 for the Lords Test match? You got bowlers who aren't 100% fit, and England haven't quite made the advantage of the bowling friendly conditions at the start of the day and have been properly punished afterwards. You know, it could easily have been like 350 for three at the end of the day. Then Root sort of burgles two wickets in that over. You got that headless charge down the ground and then the mother of all miscues from Green. Guess it got a few people wondering, how good is Root as an off spinner? Because you almost wonder with the fitness concerns over a couple of bowlers in the England side, Anderson's 41 at the end of the month, Broad 37. Can Root actually fulfil the role as the team spinner without leaching the side?
Yeah, he's good. And he's also improving a lot, I think, actually. Like, there's a reason why his average in Test cricket is still north of 40 with the ball, I think. I haven't checked it since those two wickets today, but I'm
about 43, 44.
Yeah. That, I mean that is the average of a part-timer. And yet you watch him bowl sometimes, you're like, hang on, this guy is better than that. And I think it is because he has just got better. He's got a nice action. He's able to, I mean, you can see it when he bowls those bounces. He can really drive the ball in a way that, you know, good, like decent test spinners do. And also his you don't hear as much talk about Root's back these days, I guess, you know, since the weight of the world lifted off his shoulders when Ben Stokes took over the captaincy, maybe that's less than that a bit.
Point.
But he seems just be fitter batting as well as he ever has and bowling as well as he ever has too.
Marcos, why the hell do we keep playing at Lords? We never win. Why can't we just tear it down? It's a fair point. England's record at Lords really isn't very good. And I know it's particularly bad against Australia. I think they just won test win against Australia at Lords in the last 90 years or something like that. But England have lost six tests at Lords in the last 10 years. I know they generally play two tests a year here, but it is a bit of a bogey round for England.
Also got some troublesome spectators at Lords, don't they? With the
we can't finish the show without a nod to that iconic Bairstow manhandling of the Just Stop Oil protesters. It did look like Bairstow had a very set plan for how he's going to deal with them.
He did, yeah. I think there was also a brief moment because Bairstow's a rugby fan. And it was a proper rugby tackle to begin with, but there was also a moment where you think like, oh, he could flip the legs up here and go for a sort of a Brano Driscoll-esque or a tackle on Brano Driscoll-esque spear tackle, kind of drive, and obviously thankfully he didn't. But what a moment, and just the business-like manner with which he marched a long way while holding a full adult human.
It wasn't small.
Incredible moment. Also, we should pay some tribute to the photographers who just
absolutely nailed their brief there.
Like Stu Forster and Ryan Pearce in particular. There's one, I don't know how Ryan Pearce managed to get the one with the orange dust framing it so perfectly, but it's incredible. And then one, so that's kind of like a poetically beautiful, just isolating Bairstow and the protester in like this sort of like, in this maelstrom. And then you've got the Stu Forster one just captures the chaos brilliantly with Bairstow sort of on one, Warner kind of like holding his bat out, like a sort of defending himself. In the background, you've got Bairstow picking his guy up over his shoulder. Yeah, amazing.
At the end of the day, not a good day for England, but in a very England under Stokes McCullum, kind of inexplicably, they're kind of in it. Like, it really could be 400 all out. It's still got the new ball, only two or three ball overs bowled with it so far.
Pitch could flatten out as well, possibly.
Yeah. Yeah. So actually, in a Australia definitely on top, but you know, at one point it looking like England maybe 10 to 20% for the win when Head and Smith were batting together, but at the end of the day maybe 30 to 40.
Yeah, I'd say 35% is about where I'd stick it. Yeah, I mean, and hopefully just another really good game, I think.
Right, that's everything from day one at Lords. We'll be back tomorrow where we'll be joined by Butch.
Podcast Network.